What's going on, everybody? This is James Grandmaster Facts Voice, and you're here for another episode of the Facts Project. Today, special guest, repeat guest. The man's literally putting up personal best every time he comes in here. It's like he's going to the gym. Anthony Stokes, everybody.
Thank you so much for having me.
Word, man. So when we talked about this, I'm going to say about a year ago, we talked about, actually the question came about as to like, what other genres did you want to hop into? And you talked about the fact that you started writing a comedy.
Yes. Yes. A lot of my earlier work before I started publishing things was comedy.
Mm-hmm. Now, and that's a broad question because it's almost like what type of comedy? It could be like slapstick. It could be pretty much an action comedy, but you chose the case of dark comedy, and a dark comedy in the case in this particular story is a little kid with two parents that happen to be serial killers.
Yes. Yeah. So, dark comedy. My bad. Real quick. So the two, I talked about this before, but the two pieces of fiction that really got me into writing was Superbad and Inglourious Basterds.
Okay.
So when you look at that, those are both, I mean, Inglourious Basterds isn't a comedy in the traditional sense, but it has a lot of black humor. You know, it has like a really, it's really irreverent in a lot of ways. So, you know, 15 years later, I think we can trace kind of the influence back to that time, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially like the, how you're basically like building a resolve around like a couple serial killers that just happen to have a prodigy for a son.
Yeah, he's a prodigy in a sense, right? Like Tommy, he goes to he's 8 years old and he goes to high school. He might be older than that, but basically he skipped ahead. He's a little kid and he goes to high school. So in some ways he's very smart, and then socially he's like behind even for his age though.
Yeah, he's
like,
very depraved.
Oh no.
Very.
That was not the goal. That was not the goal, but I mean, I really wanted something that stood out, you know, and I wanted something that represented also. So the big two influences for this were Calvin and Hobbes, which I grew up with.
Because I wrote that down.
Okay, cool.
I put it Calvin and Hobbes and Boris and Natasha, although I put as a hyphenated question Jessica Rabbit, so I put Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Yeah, I mean, and yeah, she's like, exactly. She's like kind of like a reference.
And her name is Jessica.
Her name is Jessica, so she's kind of like the mom from the Addams Family. She almost like, it was like, it seemed like there was a lot of cartoons with thick moms, like Dexter's mom, Miss Incredible, kind of like that sort of build. And yeah, it's like, what if Calvin never had Hobbs, you know, like, and also Johnny the Homicidal Maniac, which is like also a really big. Okay. And I didn't grow up, thankfully, I didn't grow up on Johnny, but I grew up on Invader Zim as well. So this is a throwback for me on several levels, you know, in terms of the genre, the subject matter, the influences and all that. It's actually my favorite. I don't like the term passion project because I'm truthfully passionate about everything, you know, but this was the one I'm like, I need this to do well. Like if anything were to do well, I need this one to do well for sure.
Do you feel like that, because you talked about one of your biggest influences was Superbad. Do you feel like dark humor works best when it's seen through the eyes of somebody that's like youthful, very young? Does it seem that much more funnier?
I think it's a different kind. So in this, okay, so I'm going to give away a gag. So Jessica in her closet, she has a gimp suit with a dog mask on it. You didn't see that? You didn't see that part?
No.
And essentially, she's like, he's like, what is this? Like, he's not, if you or I were to see that, we'd be like, what the fuck? But him being a kid, he doesn't recognize what it is. So that adds a layer to humor. So I think it adds another, it adds another layer to that for sure.
Yeah, because you come to realize like how just off in space and just like when I talked about it before, he's deprived of a lot of this shit. So
you said deprived, you said depraved. You
know I did say depraved at first, but he's also deprived of a lot of things. One happened to be in food, and the other one happened to be in the education that he's receiving because he's in high school.
Yes.
Because he's sitting there in one portion of the book where he's sitting in a sex education class and the principal's getting him out of there. He's literally in a trench coat. He ready to go. And I don't mean
No.
ready to go like he's trying to leave class.
He so that whole thing, so he's that came about because he's in sex ed, so he's older. I was like, what does it look like when a kid goes to high school? And it's kind of one of those stories that kind of fills out the premise a little bit. And it's like, what does look? I know when I was 9 years old, I was curious what a vagina looks like. You know, that's like, so that's what it's just like. Again, it's like he's mature. He's more mature than like your average 9-year-old,
Of course.
but he also doesn't know what he doesn't know. Like, and that's kind of the joke too. Like, he's very smart, but he's still a kid.
Yeah, and just like a little kid that has a bunch of grown ass people around him in school, or bigger people around him in school, he's getting bullied. But the
Yes.
thing is, he also knows how to counteract those bullies.
Yeah, absolutely. So, his mom, Jessica, who is the side character, maybe secondary protagonist, is a serial killer. You know, she marries old men for money and then kills them and then gets the life insurance. So he's picked up a lot of how to be manipulative and how to finesse from his mom, like unknowingly, you know, in a large way.
And the dynamic between them two is odd because she could give a shit about him as well. It's not like she's like doing this to provide for her kid.
No.
She's doing this to basically provide for herself and only her. Like
Yes.
you can get a piece of this steak after I finish it. You can suck on the bone from the T-bone
Yeah.
after I'm done. Like she could give
Yeah.
a damn about this kid. So it's almost like at the point, how come she's never tried to get rid of Tommy?
That will be explored. That'll be explored for sure. 100%. But long story short, basically, like, she doesn't want to bring more attention to herself. You know, like if her son goes missing. So she's trying to keep him just alive enough.
Man, and when you now I'm going through like your library, and the fact that you've had a very established wrestling comic, you've gone through mental health on maybe one or two occasions with intrusive thoughts and with the K. You've constructed yourself to do manga, you know, in the
Yes.
ways that you've done this, and now jumping into comedy. Is it going to be a continuous thing of a feeling out process when you're trying to basically put these stories together and trying to see what essentially fits? Or is this just like, I'm just going to boost out as much of my personality as possible, and I'm gonna do what I feel is right at the time.
Well, my first, so I think it's a two-parter. Like the reason why, and I've said this before, the reason why I dip into multiple genres is because when I'm at a con table, when I had Decay, I'd be like, "Do you like horror?" And people would say no. I'd be like, "Have a nice day." So what I want to have something for everybody. I have a kid's book, I think is in the works as well. Like, not like this, but like an actual kid's
I remember
book.
I saw you just wrote about that too. Like you wrote that, I wonder how people would feel if I did one.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing I don't have. I don't have anything for like small kids. I don't have anything for. Now, if you're like a teenager, you can read Decay, you can read
If you're a
Gods
teenager,
Are
you can
Dead.
read this book, kind of. You know what I'm
You
saying?
could, yeah, no, 100% you could. You know what I'm
Yeah.
saying? But you're talking about like, I don't know, I'm not a look, I don't know. Like, you're talking about older. For me, it'd be like more mature, like, you know, 15, 16, 17. But I'm wanting working on something where like, you know, like, I don't know, like ages 8 through 12 could. I just want something for everybody. But also, it's like these ideas are coming to me organically, and then I'm just writing about them. I think Tap or Die. No, my friend had a wrestling idea that I helped develop. All these are stuff that are kind of just original, and I think I doubled down on the ideas to have that reach as far as genre goes.
Now, it when you talk about like how where the storyline could fit the realm of somebody like that could be a teenager. I look at It's Fun to Kill People from the standpoint of somebody that used to read like the Mad comics, like the Mad TV
Yeah.
comics back in the day. And this would
Yeah.
be like the perfect comic strip that would fit in that bylines outside of Calvin and Hobbes, because it was like a little bit raunchy. And even if it was going through the day to day of maybe like a sort of little ass kid in a high school, this would be the type of storyline that would basically fit in that realm. These are the stories that would basically go in there. And I've never seen you do raunchy before.
Yeah.
So I've seen you do NSFW, but I've never seen you put that amount of raunch in there before.
Absolutely. And also, you're trying to be smart, right? Like, everything is supposed to be smart. I don't want to just a kid that just says the F word a lot, right? I don't even know if he cusses that much. I'm sure he does, but it's not excessive. And so it's like, okay, what's a funny scenario that we can also, with it being I don't know if we said this, it's like vignette. So I think like 3 to 5 page little stories that end up being put together in a floppy. But there isn't a through line traditionally, but you do tell slices of an overarching story as well. And that's kind of the fun part, is like, because I love that when I'm watching something that seems disconnected, it ends up there is a story going throughout it. And part of the mystique of watching it, part of the mystery of watching it, is like, oh, how will this connect overall?
Yeah. And even in the context of how you constructed the story, like when you're talking about how it seems like it could be like a little bit of vignettes, it almost seems like that in the storyline, like the beginning of it, you're learning the origin story of Jessica and all her marriages. Then you even have like the portion of basically what Tommy's school life is about. The fact that he's like always fucking hungry because his mom don't feed him at home.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You could also go into the fact that where Jessica discovers OnlyFans for the very first time.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So like these certain factors, these individual topics could all be comic strips, but they all seem to fit in this one big storyline.
Yes. Yeah. And that, like, yeah, that was a big thing. I wanted to be, there's a freedom of like, I would, you know, the goal I think is to make a comic you'd want to read. And like, I'm like, yo, I wish I could read this for the first time. You know, I truthfully, now I don't know how I would feel about it 100%, but I want something that's going to keep me on my toes, you know? Mm. And that also means mixing in some moments of somberness as well, you know?
It's true, because you see that in the end.
Mm-hmm. Because if it's all cynical, 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 that gets it's lazy, truthfully. You're not really getting any character development. And then also the audience expects that. You have to have the curveballs in there to get people to like get caught off guard, essentially.
Yeah, and you would see that in a Calvin and Hobbes. Even though they would always get in trouble, you would see like a certain comic strip where, like, you know, they would like hold each other down if one of them was in a rut.
Johnny the Homicidal Maniac too. There are times where it's like really irreverent, and there's times where it's really sad. It's just really depressing, you know. And that's the kind of, and I talk about this a lot, is I want, when you're reading a book of mine, I don't want you to have one single feeling when you're reading it. I want you to feel multiple things, you know, because that's what when I pick up something, I want to feel multiple things. I want to be scared, happy, laughing, you know, all this stuff, you know?
Yeah, like every kid, or shit, you can't even say every kid, but every human being has that moment where they first discovered ice cream. and the thing is, Tommy has that moment in the strip, you know? It's like his eyes just bulge out of his head, and it's like, bro, this is like amazing. Like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah. I think even in that moment of happiness, you're like, damn, this kid's never had ice cream. And then you look back and say, oh yeah, that makes total sense.
Yeah, the kid Patrick is like, bro, he's like, you never had this shit?
Yeah.
Like, he can't even believe it, because he's like, you're 8 years old, man. You should have had tons of ice cream by now. Exactly. But this is like your first little bit. And he felt empathy for him in that moment, because he was like, yo, you look like somebody that needed ice cream here.
Exactly. Exactly. No, 100%.
And he doesn't even understand that. Like, somebody wants to give something to him.
Yes. And he's like, exactly. And I think the most, what has been my favorite part, truthfully, is the character building. Like, I think Tommy and Jessica, like, I'm all about, truthfully, they call it the two-man game in basketball. But that's how I like to look at characters when you look at Decay. I mean, that's really about a brother and a sister. When you look at Intrusive Thoughts, what it becomes is, you know, like a kid and, you know, his sleep paralysis demon. We look at Tap or Die. It's Domino and Iris. It's always two people. I don't know why that is. You know, I don't know why it works out that way. But I think this is the most interesting dynamic, and the fact that these characters can't be vulnerable. The fact that these characters are essentially caricatures. Like, how do you develop a caricature? You have to be very smart about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you have to be very strategic about it.
The other thing that I come to realize in the way of basically like building this book, as somebody who grew up as an only child with a single mom, is that you come to find out is that your mom is probably more tortured than you are.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like looking forward. I'm looking at like future issues down the line, and I'm like, you know, Jessica might be a tortured soul herself.
Oh my God!
Like if I'm this fucked up, imagine how she is.
And that's something we're gonna explore, right? Her being one. You know, it is. It's interesting because what makes a character what makes a character multidimensional. And really, because you could look at a Marvel villain as being one note, but like nobody would call the Joker one note. But you know, like that's a very dynamic character. I think the thing that makes those characters interesting is having presence, mm-hmm. having good design, and then having like really good motivation. You know, like having conviction essentially. Like it's really interesting to have a character that has a lot of conviction. That's where a lot of good stories come from.
True. True. And surprisingly, we don't get the father in the first issue.
You don't get the father in the first issue. He's coming, believe me. He's on the way. And where it's gonna go, where that's gonna go is gonna be super interesting. You know, I'm very excited to get into all these details. But to me, it's just when I watch a cartoon or when I watch certain things, you don't get everything right away.
You don't.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
no.
So that's kind of what it is. Like there's going to be so much, but we can't get into all of it right now, you know?
Mm-hmm. Would you feel as though that's the problem with a lot of like a lot of storylines that are basically being built right now? Whether it's movies, comic books, TV, is that they're trying to throw a lot at you at one time without actually building the story?
I think so. I mean, no, it's not. I mean, that, no, 100%. You know, it's so much, when you think about it, so much of what makes stories compelling is withholding information. That's what a mystery is, you know. Right. That's what comedy is. It's hiding things, horror, it's sleight of hand. And nowadays, it's all about giving the audience exactly what they want. When you think of your favorite finales, what I think of is two. I think of three finales. I think of The Sopranos,
okay, which
a lot of people weren't dissatisfied with, but a lot of people love that ending. And
because you don't know.
I think it's a great
everybody movie. Has their draws up their own opinion about what the ending was.
But I think on the whole, people like that ending. I think on the whole, thematically, it's a good ending. When you look at Breaking Bad, Walt and Jesse don't say anything to each other. You don't get that final conversation. Like the audience wants to be dissatisfied in a way. It's a weird dynamic. They want to be dissatisfied in interesting ways because then you can draw your own conclusion. I can say, damn, what would Walt say to Jesse? And in my head, I get to build the lore in my head. And then we look at Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones, there was no stone left unturned as far as lore or questions. They explained everything. Everything got wrapped up in a neat bow. And you're like, damn, it's one of the most reviled endings like of a TV show. And it's like, it's this strange dynamic. And that's why I don't like fan service.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's why you're training audiences. What made Game of Thrones so good, and I was somebody who fell off of Game of Thrones because I was like, they set up the Ice King or whatever in the first episode, and we don't see him until the end of season three.
It's true.
And I was like, that's bad. And my friend was like, nah, that's just that's just thoughtful pacing. And I watched it again. I was like, no, that's cool. Game, get you the not Rob Stark. Was it? I don't want to say Tony Stark. Who's the dad?
Ed.
Ed Stark. He sees his kids. He never sees his kid again. He's like, I'll tell you about your dad or your mom. Excuse me. I'll tell you about your mom. And then we don't find out till season six. It's like true. The audience.
It's like I'll divulge the information, and then he never gets a chance to do it.
Yeah, it's incredibly dissatisfying. You killed the main character episode 5 or 6, but that's, to me, that's one of the best seasons of television of all time. So for me, I want my audience to be smart more than anything. I want my audience to be smart, and I want to train them to be like, okay, I don't need to see every single thing right now. I'm cool with information being dulled out because ultimately I know it's going to, you know, result in a better payoff later. Mm.
So when we're talking about like dark comedies, and you talked about like Superbad, and we've also talked about the fact that when you did Tap or Die, you filled a void for a genre that just wasn't there. Do you see other dark comedy comics that are out there?
To a degree. On Kickstarter, I would say there are definitely comics that have an aesthetic. I hope that what we found is the perfect blend. You have comics that are like, I'm not trying to dump on anybody, just from my perspective. Yeah. You have comics that are dark comedy and they're kind of just off. They're not traditional comedy, right? Mm-hmm. Like we deal into some heavy stuff here, you know, some really out there, like silly stuff. And then, or you get too dark. You almost get it like, okay, but where's the fun? This is almost too off-putting.
Right.
You know? And what I hope is that we rolled the line and made something that was both funny and dark and hopefully, you know, thought-provoking in certain parts.
Okay. Is there any consistent mainstream characters that you see fitting into a dark comedy mold?
I would say Deadpool would be one, but even Deadpool, I think from what I've read, is still kind of like it's a little. I'm not trying to dump on Deadpool, but
some people don't think he has it to basically do dark comedy.
I think Deadpool 2, I think, is one of my favorite movies. I think Deadpool 2 actually nailed the tone. You know, like that to me was heart wrenching.
Right.
And it was very funny. It was very irreverent. You know, it's a tough line to do. I don't know. I mean, none come to mind as far as dark comedy. I think comedy in general is hard to make in terms of a comic because you don't have the odd. So much of what makes something funny is delivery, and you don't have that. So it's almost like it's not advantageous to make comedies.
True.
And comics.
Yeah, because they're trying to revolve them around characters that aren't essentially funny. Like they sometimes even try to like push the Joker to do like dark comedy in some storylines. They'll do that with Reverse Flash in some storylines. It's not that Reverse Flash can't do it. It's just that he's always been derived as like the biggest fucking hater of a Barry known to man. So that's why he is what he is. You just can't write stories that like he's doing it because it's funny. There's nothing funny about the shit. He's just a hater.
No, exactly. You end up going too far, right? And I mean, hey, tonal balance is everything, you know.
Definitely.
It's tricky.
Now, when we talk about the plans for the book. Now, when I know you like to get ahead of the game and you talk about your writing processes. And the ability to put this into a certain package that you want to have. How many issues are we talking about with this?
It's hard to say, man, because this is my baby.
You could go for a while.
You could go for a while. And I don't know, like at least 10. I mean, you look at it in volumes, like three issues in a volume. So at least 9. But hopefully this is something that goes on for a long time, because I think we can introduce we barely scratch the surface as far as characters that we introduce. We want to have recurring gags as well. We want to have recurring characters. So there's a whole lot we can get into.
Yeah. And you've had the opportunity, of course, to be at Comic-Cons and talk about the I guess the overall functionality of the indie comic space. Now, when the reception of that crowd and how the questions are basically asked to you, the same way that I do, how do you feel like that's being received, especially in the amount of comics and the amount of genre of comics that you create? Like, how's that reception been to you when you be at Comic-Con and they're asking you questions about basically how did you do it? Because I want to do it someday.
You know what's funny? There's a two part. I think people do respect the amount of work because, well, now the thing is, somebody's like, all right, tell me about the K. Tell me about the True Stars. Tell me about Gods with Dead. Tell me about Exorcist Club. Tell me. And you end up having spent all this energy on maybe a sale. Like people kind of want the pitch for everything. That's one downside. I did have, I'm at this point where if you walk up to me at a con and you're kind of trying to like get advice from me, you really got to buy a book or I'm not about to really, I'll keep you have it. Because you gotta look at all the shit that's on this fucking table, bro. You see, it's about to be in my con in May. It's about to be 13 issues in like six series. And you want to just, you can see the money. Like you see how much it, and then you want to just kind of like come over and be like, "Hey man, like what's the, like, bro? You get a good answer or two out of me, and then that's it. But I gotta save my energy. I gotta pay for the table.
Yo, I'm spent.
I'm dead. But after giving a pitch for 10 different comics, like I'm dead on a Sunday. Forget about it."
Oh my God. But overall, like being how in the fact that you now have all these series and you have multiple genres, it's like, what are they mostly pointing at right now?
I can truthfully say that a little bit of everything there, and this is the best part, is that truthfully, no lie, everything does good. I'm not sitting with a large stack of a, when I go to a con, my number ones are gone. Intrusive Thoughts, gone. Two different cons, gone. Exorcist Club, number one. Two different, like back to back cons. We had a decent. We had a decent sized inventory gone. Decay, I had to reprint Decay number one like three times. Got you know it's so it's a really it's a good problem to have. And fortunately, I mean, I think fortunately, I have enough room to get everything on the table. I'll always carry all my number ones. But truthfully, if I had to say what sells the best, I would still say it's Decay. But I think that's because I have five issues of that available. Like it's a done story. So
Because
I
I
would
would
say,
no, go ahead.
but like if I had say three issues of Tap or Die, or three issues of Intrusive Thoughts, three issues of Exes Club, that those might sell better. But right now, Decay is still king.
Now that kind of like takes away the argument, because a lot of people would say, I feel like the floppies, the single issue floppies aren't necessarily going anywhere because I don't have a trade paperback.
It's a very consumer. It's interesting because the consumers at a con, the consumers at Kickstarter, and the consumers on a website are all different. They're all different kind of consumers. Now there's overlap for sure, but if I'm at a con, there are some people that'll be at a con and be like, "Yeah, I only buy trades." You're like, "All right, see you in like."
I see that a lot.
I'll be like, "Well, if you buy this now, I can get the trade." And some, I mean, it hasn't worked yet, honestly, but. What people don't understand is most people understand that a con is a boutique experience. You can go to what? If you're on the East Coast, you can go to maybe 12 cons in a year. That's an experience that you can only have basically have once a month. You're not, this is not something you're going to every weekend. It's a boutique experience. You go on Kickstarter, it's a boutique experience. There's nothing else like a Kickstarter. So these people are willing to pay to, the difference in some of them, but like, do you think like a 45-year-old aunt really knows the value of a trade versus a floppy? Like, really, do you think you think a 10-year-old understands the difference of a flop? Yeah, no, not really. And my thing was I wanted to be able to sell to anybody, and largely, that's been the case.
No, I get that 100%. Because I see both sides of it. And some people will like have the argument with you and say, Well, I can't really like go to a con yet because I don't have a volume yet. I like, no, you can go to cons. You can go there with one book if you want to. I mean, you probably won't get what the next person next to you that probably has like seven series is doing, but you can go there with your one book. Shit, there's people that go there with notebooks and just sit there with a QR code selling their books digitally. It
That's
happens.
insane. That's insane. I think well, the thing is, for me, I don't want trades, honestly. When I'm at a con, I don't want trades because the value is worse for me. I want trades on Kickstarter. I want trades on a website, essentially. Because if I sell 5 issues of Decay for $7 or $35, if I sell the trade for $20, maybe $25, maybe the margins are at $20, the margins aren't the same, you know. Like, I'm pretty sure, probably like not for sure, not. So it just depends. It all depends on the consumer situation. There's no one size fits all. It's all this stuff.
Right. Now, It's Fun to Kill People drops. Was that tonight?
It's supposed to be today. It was supposed to be today, but Kickstarter's, I mean, it's insane. You couldn't edit the rewards on Kickstarter. You could edit the add-ons, the story, the items. You could make new rewards, but you couldn't edit the rewards. It was so goofy. So we're launching tomorrow.
Bet. So I bet pretty much by the time this drops, the shit will be live. More than likely, you're probably
Yes.
gonna get knocked on the first day. So I'm gonna say
Yeah.
congratulations in advance as always. You
Thank you. Thank
know what
you.
I'm
I
saying?
mean, this one is definitely, it's interesting, right? Because it's like I think I might have helped myself with cons, but I don't know, Kickstarter wise, it's like doing all these different genres. When I say I have a book coming out, you don't know what it is. And that's only becoming
That's
more,
true.
it's only becoming like, if that's a problem, that's only becoming worse. Now what I'm hoping is that the quality of the books will start to, I'll get a core audience that doesn't care. You know, they'll just get whatever. And that does happen. I do get those sales as well. And it's not an expensive book. So I'm really hoping for that, you know, to get fun. And hopefully this, I've to me, like I said, this is like the thing that I want to read the most for my book. This is the first book where I'm like, I would truthfully be starved for more if I was to read this, you know. Very excited.
Now, when we talk about the creative team on this, if I remember correctly, somebody did the cover art, like a variant cover art on Intrusive Thoughts, was the person that did the artwork on this book, correct?
True Thoughts 2. Yes.
Yeah.
Actually, yes. I wish I had a copy of the comic around. I don't. It was Marco Leone and Fabi who did the comic. It was the cover where the spirit's in the back and the
Yep.
kid looks all freaked
And
out.
that's my cover because, well, I have it over here, so I don't have
Yeah. Well, that no, that I mean that is the that is part of the creative team for the book. You know, we added some new people. This has been the most people I've ever worked on a book with. Well, I mean, Nexus Club was more people, but this has been like a lot. It's been a lot. You know, this is the book that, I mean, aside from Decay, it may be more so than Decay because I thought I was hot shit when I wrote Decay. And I still stand by that book. That book is impeccably well written. You know, I'll stand by that. But this is the first, I'm like, I'm doing comedy. And I got, you know, it's a bunch of stuff that went on behind the scenes. And this book like pushed me for sure. This book absolutely pushed me to my limit creatively, stamina wise. And I couldn't be more proud of the product, the final product, truthfully. I wish I could snap my fingers and have this book, you know, beside me. And I think it's gonna go crazy.
Hey.
I think it's gonna go crazy at cons. And if I get a couple issues in, I'm probably gonna get a banner for the It's Fun to Kill People.
Looking
Like,
forward to
preferably,
it.
this would be my main series.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to it, man. So always a pleasure to talk with you, man. So
Absolutely.
that's what's up. So of course, I'm going to say because this episode is dropping tomorrow that this is dropping at the same time as It's Fun to Kill People. And everybody's gonna basically get their hands on that. So I appreciate you doing this with me as always. We get a chance to chop it up, of course, discussing this book as always. And this is what we do.
Yeah, hell yeah, bro. Thank you for having me.
Word. So Anthony Stokes, James Grandmaster Facts Boys for the Facts Project, go out there to Kickstarter, get It's Fun to Kill People, issue one. I'm not going to say tomorrow. I'm going to say today.
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 Today. Praise
Today.
God, it's today.
All right. So go out there and get that. So from everybody at the Facts Project, we are out.